بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين بارك الله اجمعين والصلاه والسلام على رسوله الكريم وعلى اهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد okay, so to recap about, give a little synopsis about what we were talking about for the last few days. We were talking about what we need to have for an honorable community in this society. What we need to have for an honorable Muslim society in this community, in this world that we live in. And we are looking at spiritual and religiously practical aspects. Of course, there are many other aspects that we could look upon on a rational basis, for example. You know, for example, quality of leadership, organization, how communities are developed, and so forth and so on. But there's a lot of talk about that. We want to look at recommendations for relationships between each other that are important in building the building blocks of our community and providing the cement for our community. And we were looking at the hadith by Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, where he said that the believer has 7 rights incumbent upon him, upon his fellow believer, which Allah has made it obligatory upon them. And he would ask us about it on the day of judgment. And the first of them is to esteem the believer highly in your eyes. To esteem each other. To esteem the believer highly in his or her eyes. In other words, when you look at each other, you see something noble. Okay? You see somebody worth respect. And their outward appearance might not show that, but you have to assume, for you to have that type of relationship, you should assume that they have something better than you that you can't see. So if, for example, you're a scholar, you might see that person and assume that person is a better friend, a better soldier, a better father or mother than you are. So that's one thing. The other one was to have love for that person in their heart. And you could only love, we said, you could only love that which is beautiful. And when you assume that that person has something beautiful in them, it would help us to bring that love forward. And the third one was to assist that person, that believer, financially from one's own wealth. And we talked about wealth as being a gift from Allah. Wealth is not just something that you work for and you deserve and you earn. Because if Allah took away your strength, whatever strength or intellect you had, you would not be able to gain that wealth. Wealth is something that Allah gives to you for you to spend on behalf of the community, for you to share with other people. That's what wealth is all about. And if you do not spread your wealth, then that flow of wealth will become constricted in yourself. And it would weigh you down, and it would be a witness against you on the day of judgment. So it's to assist a believer financially. And to assist a believer financially doesn't necessarily mean that you just give them money. It also means, as we mentioned before, empowerment. Strengthening that person, giving that person the skills in order to make their independent way in the world. There have been many hadith, for example, where a person comes unto the Prophet and asks him for support, asks him for charity, And what he did was teach them how to, you know, do business, for example. You know, tell one person, okay, go and collect firewood and sell it to people, and so forth and so on. So sharing one's wealth is not just sharing money, but also sharing expertise, training people, and encouraging people to be able to fend for themselves. The fourth one was to love for himself what he loves for others. And this is a universal rule: do unto others as you would like them to do unto you. That, again, it meant as well empowering people. Because if you would love for your brother what you would love for yourself, you would like to see your brother have something like what you have. And so you would try to encourage them to get that thing. You might share it with them, you might give it to them, or you might show them how to, and this is best of all, how to acquire such a thing. And this love for oneself, what one loves for another, is not just in the area of material things, but also in the area of things like, for example, learning how to be sociable, for example, learning how to carry oneself, learning how to, trade in one's internal qualities, okay? The fifth is to prohibit others from backbiting him. Because as we mentioned, backbiting is a form of character assassination. And one of the things that distinguishes the Muslim community is that of dignity. That we always are concerned with preserving the dignity of each other. And when we prohibit others from backbiting our brother and sister in Islam, in deen, what we are doing is maintaining that godlike dignity that we have for each other. The sixth was to visit that person when they are sick. Visit your brother and sister when they are sick. And in visiting one's brother or sister when one is sick, it means to encourage and make grow the sense of empathy. And so attending the sick or visiting that sick person brings about a sense of community feeling, a sense of empathy that is very necessary in this society. The seventh one was to attend his funeral procession and not say anything about him that is bad after that person dies. And attending a funeral procession, we mentioned, is also a source of great barakah for those people who attend that procession, and also a source of great barakah for those people who are being buried. So the presence of a believer in society is based upon one of use to the Muslim society, one of barakah to the Muslim society. And so we talked about, for example, the first time a child enters the world, we do an akika, and we slaughter an animal in lieu of the child, and we feed people, and we weigh the hair, and we give the weight of the hair in gold in charity. What it indicates is that that person is a source of barakah, a source of Allah's mercy upon the society. And then when you die, the very presence of the community at your janazah prayers and following you to the grave is one way you convey barakah upon the deceased person, and the deceased person's very funeral itself brings barakah upon you. And we talked about the story of the Bani Israel, where Hazrat Dawood, for example, it was revealed to him that a particular person who was appeared to be very good in society was basically a hypocrite. And so Hazrat Dawood did not attend the funeral of that person. But while the washing and the clothing, the shrouding was taking place, the people who were present, 40 of them, were saying, "Oh Allah, we know nothing but good from this man, and you know best." Until Allah, respecting and being aware of their act of mercy to that person, forgive that person for all the sins that he had done that was invisible to them. And then he asked Hazrat Dawood, "Why didn't you attend the funeral?" And Hazrat Dawood said, "Well, you said that you revealed to me that this man had sins that he didn't tell anybody else, that people didn't know about." You know, he said, "Well, I forgave them because these people asked forgiveness for him." And so when you attend a funeral, you are asking forgiveness of that person. When you speak only good of the deceased, when you speak only good of the Muslim who has passed away, the mu'min who has passed away, and avoid complaining about him and so forth, what you are doing is saving him in the grave, is sending blessings upon him. And we all depend upon blessings upon each other. When we get together, for example, we get together and read the Holy Quran. We distribute it in pieces, in parts to each other, so that we could be reading the Holy Quran over and over and over again. Okay? I want to give you a little story about my own personal experience with that. My father passed away. And my father wasn't a Muslim. My father was a Christian. And I was visiting my mom in Canada after the funeral. And I was staying in her place. And she has a little small living room, which I was staying in. And I was reading Quran for him in that room. And they were doing some construction in the bathroom. And so there was a little dust coming into her bedroom. So I said to her, "Mom, I'll sleep in your bedroom because it's kind of dusty out here. And you sleep in the living room that I am in." And in the living room, the next morning she got up and she said, I had a dream about your dad. And your dad came up to me and asked me, "Where is that book? I'd like to have that book." She's a Christian. She had no idea what he was talking about. I said, "Mom, that book is the Quran." Okay? That book is the Quran. So when we pass away and we get together as a community, and that's for a Muslim, that's for a Christian. Okay? If you look at some of our Wahhabi, I don't know if you want to call them friends, they have a different attitude. You know, they would never do that for a Christian. You know, I heard some of them telling people who have converted, you know, don't embrace your parents anymore and don't kiss them and so forth because they are najis kufar. Okay? And they came up to me, some people came up to me and said, "Is it true?" You know, some of these Christians, you know, who are related to these people came up to me and said, "Is it true that, you know, when you become a Muslim, you can't hug your parents and so forth?" I said, "Where do you get that news from?" Well, it came from these Wahhabi people, right? These Salafi people. Our religion, our madhab, is a madhab of mercy. It's a madhab of love for everybody, okay? And so, here's a good case in point. Here, a Christian is benefiting from the Quran being read, not to mention us as Muslims benefiting from the Quran being read, okay? And if you don't hang with your brothers and sisters, if you don't come to places like these, if you don't relate to people, how many people would come to your funeral? How many people would come and read a Quran for you? And how much blessings are you losing from that? Not only this, when we talk about the 40 people in the time of Hazrat Dawood, they said, "We know only good from him." That means that they have a relationship with him. They can vouch for him. You know, it's one thing to read Quran for somebody that you don't know, and you're just doing it by, you know, as a gesture of charity. It's another thing if you're doing it and you know that person, and you're putting your soul into it. You see? This is why we need community. And this type of barakah is something that flows in and out of us. It's something that cements us. It is not about just simply the rationalization of leadership and programming and so forth and so on. Because if you don't have love, if you don't have spirituality, you're in trouble. So be careful of this. Be cognizant of this. You know, we need to have personal relationships with each other. Because when we are talking about this type of hadith, you know, you're talking about, for example, being the financial disposal of your brother and sister and so forth, okay? We are not talking about people we don't know. We're not talking about people we don't know. You know, you might be crazy if somebody walks up the street and says, La ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah, Shadu anna Ali and Wali Allah, and says, you know, can I borrow £1,000 from you? And you don't know him from Adam. You'd be crazy to give it to him. I'm serious. You'd be crazy to give it to him. You don't know him. So therefore, as we mentioned before, we need to be able to not only get together as a community at large, but also to form groupings, where we could know each other intimately, And so therefore, we should be moving towards trying to organize ourselves on the basis of, for example, age groups, on the basis of commonalities, on the basis of professions, on the basis of mothers getting together, young mothers getting together, and things of that nature, to be able to know each other on a more intimate level so that we can say, yes, I know that person. This is what communities are based on. Communities are not just general, wide conglomerations of people. It is based up of groups that come together and work with each other for a common goal. And we are, we are lacking in this respect. We have too many things that divide us among each other. Among them are things like our ethnicity. Among them are our attitude itself to the community that we live in. All right? How many people here are spending their Zakat al-Fitra outside of this country? I bet you more than 3/4 of us are doing this. We are sending it, what? Home. Because this ain't home. This is not home. Okay? This is a place where we just chill out, milk the British cow for what we want, all the milk we can get, okay? Get the education that we need, okay? And then we want to spend it outside. We don't invest anything in our community, but we expect our community to do something for us. We always expect our community, this community, to do something for us, but we do nothing for it, okay? And then we start worrying about where can I find a wife for my son and a husband for my daughter. You know, where can I get a job, and so forth and so on, because you don't have any investment in this community, because we still see ourselves, even though you carry a British passport, you see yourself as a guest of the Queen. You don't see yourself as a person who has a right here, and if you don't have a right here, you have no power over this environment. You won't put anybody in parliament. You wouldn't influence the cops. You wouldn't even be able to intervene for your own kids at school because you don't even know the language, and you don't even know somebody who can help you with this language in intervening for your kids. And so what kind of community are we going to have? We're going to have a noisy community, a disrespectful community. I don't like to hear people speak because they can't understand the language and they don't even want to learn it. That's the kind of community we're going to have. We're going to have a community where we consider ourselves first as Iranians or Iraqis, okay? First as Iranians, Iraqis, and Pakistanis, and second as Muslims in a community living in this environment. And think about it. Is that empowering you? Is that going to empower you? Is that going to make you somebody who can make a mark in this society? Because you'll always be thinking of yourselves as a minority. Let me tell you something. I'm sitting here in front of you as a professional minority. I'm black and I'm Shia. How minority could you get? I'm minority squared. And it could work in your benefit because the best are at the top and the best are the few. And the average is at the bottom and they are the many. The Imams used to refer to the Shia as the khas. These are referred to the Shia as the khas, the elite. And the rest as the am. And you know the elite always leads. The elite always leads. It's the elite that caused and created the first and only Islamic revolution that the world has ever seen and might ever see. It's the elite that did that. And it changed the entire configuration of the Middle East. Because it was the first time, because of this elite, that they gave the superpower in the Middle East, the Israeli army, the beating of their lives. And the arm is upset about this. And this is why them and the Israelis and the Americans came together to create their version of our resistance, which they call Daesh, which is nothing but a bunch of criminals and murderers who are destroying lives under the guise of religion. So, brothers and sisters, let us try to form here a local identity. It doesn't mean that you have to stop being Iranian. It doesn't mean that you have to stop being Iraqi, because the reality of this world today is a hyphenated reality. You're a British Iraqi. You're West Indian. You're British Iraqi. You're British West Indian. You're British Iranian. This hyphenated reality is there because the world is becoming a smaller place. But as long as you start thinking of yourself as somebody disempowered and some kind of stupid guest and somebody who has no power, and all you're doing is looking backwards from where you came, you know, always planning to go back after 5 years, and one day you woke up and you're 20 years in this country and you can't understand your own kids, then it's your fault. It's your fault that you did this, because you should have gone back 20 years ago and had the kids over there. But you can't understand them now, because they're speaking a different language to you. And I don't mean your mother tongue. A different set of values that you have no idea how to deal with. Salawat to the Holy Prophet Muhammad and his family. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. And to do this, we need to have love with each other. We need to stop seeing each other as an ethnic group. To stop seeing each other as black and white and Pakistani and this language and that language. And we need to see each other as a community, as a model community. That's going to show people how true human beings live. All right, I'm almost running out of time. I'd like to say something about Eid. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, كُلُّ يَوْمٍ لَا يُعْسَى اللَّهِ فِيهِ فَهُوَ عِيدٍ. He said, every day that you don't disobey Allah, that's an Eid. That's something to celebrate. Eid is coming up tomorrow. And inshallah, I hope Allah gives us rewards and accepts our fast and our activity. But what does this word of Imam Ali alayhi salam mean? It means that you have two Eids. You have two Eids. You have an objective Eid. You have an Eid that is a day that the entire community celebrates and commemorates. And then you have a personal Eid. And that personal Eid is at those occasions where you celebrate your coming closer to Allah. That's your personal Eid. And you know, in a lot of things, you have this. In Salah, you have the outward prayer, you have the outward bowing and the ruku and the sujood and so forth. And you have the inward bowing and ruku and sujood. Okay? You have that inward self. That is why, for example, you could pray Salah if you are paralyzed on a bed. If you're paralyzed on a bed, you can pray Salah. And you could bow and you could do ruku and so on a bed. Why? Because you are doing the inward prayer. You're doing the reality of the prayer. And so, for example, in the month of Ramadan, we had the Laylatul Qadr. And you know, people waste their time arguing about what day is the Laylatul Qadr, if it's yesterday or today, but they miss the point. Because the most important point about Laylatul Qadr is the subjective aspect. It is when we have been striving to come close to Allah as much as we can, giving all the effort that we can, that one night in our soul, and it could be a day outside, but it's a night of the soul, that angel will descend upon you and will give you that awareness, that ma'rifah that we so much seek in this world. You see, we have a lot of challenges to us in the outward community. There's a lot of challenges. And many of the challenges are, well, God, does God exist? Does God not exist? And we tend to counteract that with argument, with words, with rationalization. But that does not give us as much of a confirmation and conviction unless we make God our friend. You know? So we make God our Khalil. We are Habibullah. Okay? You find that, for example, in the Persian, Irfani poems, they call God the Dost, the friend. This is where we want to be. We become intimate with God, and we know him so well that he's our friend. So if somebody says to you, God doesn't exist, he said, Bolo Baba, I have no time with you. Okay? Because I know him personally. He's my friend. And it's when God becomes your friend, that's when you have that lila little card on the inside of yourself. So, Ramadan is an outward manifestation of what we should be doing on the inside. Even in the fasting, for example, the great sheikhs talk about the body of the fasting, which is the lowest level of the fasting, which is staying away from food and drink and intercourse. And the highest level of the fasting is to abstain in the limbs from what is haram. From your eyes from what is haram, your hands from what is haram. And higher than that, is to stay even away from the halal if it makes you forgetful of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's an inward reality that counts. So inshallah, I pray that all of us find this inward reality. Find the spirit of Ramadan in ourselves, because the spirit of Ramadan never ends. The spirit of Ramadan continues throughout the night. So inshallah, for all of us, give a loud salawat for Allah to bless us for completing this month of Ramadan. Salawat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.